Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 11 of the Skilled Trades Playbook. I'm your host, Juan Caruso, author of the At Your Best Playbook series. In this episode, I'm going to be speaking with Jeff Markway, a great guy, a great friend, and a retired, formerly very successful general contractor in the St. Louis area. So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about how you became a contractor and a little bit about Markway Construction.
I guess the way it started with me was, I guess you might say, I was riding around with my father, usually holding the idiot end of the tape when he would measure up future projects. Dad was...
Did you say the idiot side of the tape?
Yes. That's the end that has a little hook on it, you know. So when I was a kid, I was basically working with my father just because he needed a second hand to help hold things and measure things. And this was during the invention of the Polaroid, so pictures were being taken all the time of future projects and what we might do and follow the instructions that were often given to us by our clients. Dad started out as a carpenter who went into remodeling, primarily because he was lent out by his contractor who he worked for. He was in his, I'd say, mid to late 20s at the time. And he would be lent out to people who needed another bedroom or another bathroom or a kitchen or something of that nature. And pretty soon his remodeling business kind of grew to the point where he was his own boss. He no longer needed to work for somebody else, which in turn, when he started having a family, he started pulling children of who showed any interest in what he was doing into the business and gave them some of his hard knocks lessons so that we would avoid those type of things. From there, I got an associate degree in architecture, primarily to help my father produce drawings that he could submit for building permits and also to get something he could show the client as far as what he could do for them. And from there, it kind of grew to the point where I was spending more time seeing my own clients and he was seeing his clients. And on occasion, just to renew relationships, we would go out together on Saturday mornings and spend Saturday going out to see new projects.
So you and your dad competed on business development for the business?
Yes, we did, primarily because...
That's great.
it became kind of interesting because, you know, my father was a very competitive person and it could be because he was an athlete. He played minor league baseball and to the point where he built a ball diamond in the backyard. So that his kids could play ball with him, you know, I guess is his intent. But yes, Dad and I would often look at our financial statements at the end of the month, who was doing better.
You know? That's great. So you would do the business development and then you would manage your projects and compete on that basis. That's fantastic. That's one way to grow the business.
It really was. And it was kind of a healthy way to grow the business. It created some conflict within family businesses. Families' businesses are never easy, but between my father and I, it was fun, and we had a good time doing it. But then from there, you know, we kept going until finally my father reached the age of retirement, and if he could, he'd still be here working. He had a stroke, and it just kind of ended his career. But it kept me going, and I did it for nearly 50 years.
50 years. Gotta like that. Along the way, were you the lead within the family on the business, or did you then introduce other people into the family and continue the whole process of that competitive process?
Well, the competitiveness got a little bit difficult. With my degree and my experience, I was able to do more sales, if you would, and create more work. I had two brothers. I came into the business. My youngest brother was a carpenter and came in through the trades, which was good. I mean, he had the experience of working with people and talking to the client and understanding what it took to construct and put things together. I had an older brother who served time in Vietnam and came back a wounded soldier. I mean, he lost his leg in Vietnam, so his mobility was pretty limited. And so he ended up managing a lot of the office work. And so here you have three brothers, one with an architectural degree, one with carpenter skills, and one who managed the office staff. So there was not the competitiveness that my father had. But I did bring in a good chunk of the business. And like I said, it was only because of my past experience.
Did you guys specialize in a particular area, given that everybody seems to have been carpenters other than you?
Well, it was interesting. My dad started the business in 1950. And at that time, the TV was becoming a part of the home. And it's interesting, on his first business cards, it said TV room specialist.
Excellent.
And we were building because basically people didn't want to put the TV in their living room. That was the room for entertaining and speaking to the guests. It was often their nicest furniture, so they didn't want the kids flopping on it. So they often would build these little rooms on the back of their house off the kitchen that would have the television. And you can imagine how that evolved. So we ended up doing a lot of family room additions, which led to kitchen remodeling, which led to bath remodeling with, like I said, additional bedrooms. It was strictly a remodeling company for the longest time. I mean, it's interesting how my father said once he didn't want to get into home building because you have to spend too much time with the client. but so many of the remodeling projects that we got into in the later days were so large that we'd often spend years with our clients. But it was we were primarily remodeling contractors.
Yeah. One thing that you spoke to that is interesting was the innovative way in which your father thought in terms of how to do his business development, at least at the initial stages, where he presented himself as a TV room designer, developer, however, remodeling the house for that addition. What were some of the things that you did for the business development side? Did you come up with your own versions of that?
Oh, very much so. The TVs are sort of like toilets. Nobody really wants to admit they have one, but they're not going to give it up, you know.
Right.
And so often we had the challenge of how do you hide a television, you know. So we started out building a lot of custom cabinetry to enclose the television to hide the TV so that when people would come over, they didn't necessarily have the TV staring at them from the corner of the house. So the TV still played a big part in what we did. Not only, but it was part of it. You know, it gave us the chance to experiment and also to reinvent a lot of things. Like I said earlier, I mean, we often got into hiding TVs, and I think one of the most interesting one I did is I made it like a loaf of bread and I slid it into a pocket in the wall, and it would slide out and pivot. And no sooner did I create this that all of a sudden I found a company that was manufacturing equipment and hardware to do it, you know?
You know, obviously, since then, so much as with the thin TVs and everything else, so much of that is going on. But the one thing that what you're saying is really applicable to even today is how you need to look at your current market with where you want to build a niche and then satisfy that niche with a unique delivery, you know, a work product that is uniquely different from, you know, your competition, to stand so that you guys stand out and build a reputation around doing that unique delivery of work product that makes you stand apart.
I think creativity is something that helps a company grow. If you fall back and you make a box, and that's all you make is a box, you're not going to be going very far because boxes can be reproduced by so many other people. But if your box can open up in a certain way or fold in a certain way or do something that makes it different from the other boxes, you're going to grow. As a contractor, it's so easy to build a box, you know. And people are looking for something a little more interesting, a little more different. And that actually gave us the chance to do some interesting projects. I restored a towboat on the riverfront. It was turned into a museum piece that was used to give people a feel of what a towboat on the Mississippi River was like. And it was parked down by the arch for the longest time, and people would walk through it. It ended up disappearing, and I found out later that the Army Corps of Engineers took it over because all they needed to do was put a new engine in it because it was all cleaned up and remodeled on the inside.
Oh, that was a shame to lose that for St. Louis, but it speaks to the reputation that you built. You know, one thing, you start as a two-man operation, your dad and you, and over time you built a very successful business in St. Louis doing some really high-end work, and that doesn't come easy. How did you guys focus on building that reputation? Again, it's not that easy to, you know, whether it's the economy or the employees or however you build your business. How do you balance that? How do you think about that when you were in that process?
In a way, it was evolution from where we began, the TV room. If you're going to add a room to a house, you're going to have to cut a hole in that house so that you can go from the house into the new room. So you start looking at the structure of the house and you start thinking about how do I cut a hole through this wall and what do I have to support? Which led you to learn all sorts of things about older homes, whether it's a masonry house, whether it's a frame house, whether it was a metal stud house, whether it was a wood stud house, whether it was a veneer house, or whether it was solid masonry. It all played into the experience of adding on to it. From that, we learned a whole lot about what an old house was. And through that, we were able to work on older homes because we've seen it before in some fashion, whether it was a window that slid into a wall, or a triple hung rather than a double hung, you know, wood window. You know, we actually reproduced product to match the older homes because we were able to, we saw them, we took them apart, and we worked with them. So I think the remodeling aspect took us into a lot of older structures, and we've worked on homes that were built in the 1800s, and so often it was a compliment when we walked away from it that people would say, well, what did you do to the house? And I thought, it worked. I did it right. You know? They can't see it, you know, so that's a good sign.
As the reputation for Markway Construction built up in the St. Louis area, how was it? I mean, it's one thing for Markway, you know, Jeff Markway, your father Norbert, your brothers, they're the Markways. How about the people that you brought on? How did you pass that on, the same sense of pride and ownership, and not ownership of the business, but ownership of the job site and so on? How did you maintain that continuity so that as you grew, you were also not diluting the Markway brand in St. Louis?
I think a big part of it was the tradesmen that we brought in. We wanted carpenters that took pride in what they did, who wanted to stand back and look at it and brag and show their workmanship. Often, you know, a good craftsman is something very special. And you have one and you just don't want to lose them. You'll take care of them. And we took care of our good tradesmen. And often good tradesmen, you know, other good tradesmen, and would bring in other good tradesmen to help us and help the business grow. But a big part of it was the quality of the craftsmen that we brought in to do the work.
When you found one, how'd you keep them? I mean, if they had that kind of pride and skill, I can just imagine that any, you know, obviously in good times and in bad. In good times, the demand for their services far outstrips the availability. So how'd you keep them?
Well, we kept them primarily by keeping them working. When work was good, there was never a problem. When work was slow, when things, the economy had turned around and things were getting tough, if somebody had a screen door that had to be repaired, we fixed it for them. If we had somebody had a squeaking floor, we took care of that. We were more or less a service company as well as a construction company in the sense that we were taking care of their homes for them. And it got to the point where people wouldn't trust anybody else to come into their house, and they would just basically call us and say, come fix my house for me. Now, having said that, a good carpenter will often look at the other side of the tracks and think he could be a good contractor. It's very much a learning process. If they're young, they'll jump over the tracks and they'll walk away from us. And I saw that many times. A carpenter will leave us and start their construction company. But my father had a pretty good attitude. You know, he says, Jeff, there's enough work for everybody. He's going to learn. If he does well, he'll be fine. If he doesn't do so well, he'll be back and he'll ask for his job back and we'll give it to him. It was a tough time at times when you'd see good craftsmen walk away from you. But, you know, you can't blame people for trying to do more and getting and learning and getting better.
It's counterintuitive because you're losing a worthy player on the team, but it's good advice because if they succeed, they may be a competitor, but they can be an ally. If they don't succeed, you can have them back and get them right back into the swing of things. So that was great. What do you think it takes to be successful as a one-man, one-person operation, starting out, kicking into gear and striking out on your own? How would you advise that person that you want to see succeed?
First of all, I would say have a good ear. Listen to what people are telling you. Be very attentive to your clients' needs, especially. Try to see beyond the question. Maybe even before the questions ask, take care of it for them. It makes a big deal when you bring a truck into a yard and you put ruts across their lawn and you're unloading material and the typical contractor, and I don't mean to be typical, but there are contractors who go, well, my job is to get the material on the job and I can't worry about the lawn. Yet, if you can come back and repair the lawn and fix it again, the client's going to feel better about who you are and what you are and what you're doing. I think it's very important that you listen. You're going to solve a lot of your problems because you'll hear them before they happen.
Let's go back to 2007, 2008, in, you know, the horrible economic times that we experienced not too long ago. Hopefully we don't see those times anytime soon. One of the things that I remember in our conversations and is just how you guys were able to function and effectively come through it, despite the fact that it was extraordinarily tough. I'd love to hear your insights on dealing with adversity at that level where it's so difficult in the market, yet you still have to continue making payroll and so on.
I think a young contractor has to be very careful with how he handles his money. The money that you are earning on each project is not yours. It's your suppliers, it's your subs, it's people that work for you. If you have to borrow to pay these people, you're making some serious mistakes. So your best bet is to take care of everybody first. Whatever's left over, that's yours. And if there's nothing there, you're still successful. I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense. A good story that my father said one time, I remember at the end of the year, we're looking at our profits. And our profits were like $50. You know, it was nothing. And my comment to him was, "Dad, you know, I can't believe this." You know, I said, "We have the reputation of being one of the most expensive contractors in St. Louis, and we're not making any money." And he looks at me and he says, "I don't know what you're talking about." He says, "You've got food on your table. You've got shoes on your kids' feet. We have seven carpenters at the time." He said, "Those seven carpenters have children with shoes on their feet. They got food on the table. They're going to school. You've got hospitalization." He went through a whole list of what we did for the people that worked for us. And again, I said, you know, when I said earlier that if you didn't make any money, but you pay all your bills, you're still successful. I think that's a way of looking at the business. When things were tough, you know, you tighten your belt. You don't spend any more than you have to. You take care of every little thing that comes along. You don't turn your back on anything. If it means working longer hours to get the jobs done, do it, you know, because this is not the time to be greedy or try to be too proud. Part of it was the fact that my name was on that truck. It was my job to take care of the client. I think when things are tough, you have to do more of that.
Got to have that personal ownership, even in, and like you said, in the hard times, it's where your reputation is built. You build it along the way in the good times, but it's those hard times where, you know, you're there and you're building and you're doing your fulfilling on your commitments. It's what people want to see.
It's like my wife once said, you know, she says, you know, why don't you sit back and relax? You got lots of work. And I said, I can't relax when I have a lot of work. And then she goes, but when you don't have any work, you get crazy. And I said, yes, when I don't have work, I get busy. You know, there's no quiet time in construction.
What in the conversation that we had earlier, you had an interesting point of view when it comes to bringing on brand new assets into the business, like a new truck or a new piece of equipment. And you talked about assigning an excavator or an expensive piece of equipment. You want to assign it to somebody so that they take ownership and protect it and feel like they have a vested interest in making sure that it's always clean and always operating. Otherwise, everybody uses it and doesn't take care of it.
Sure. The thing about a piece of equipment or any tool, and a tool could be a hammer or electric drill, or it could be a $40,000 backhoe. You know, it doesn't matter. if you don't take care of it, it's not going to last. And the biggest problem, I think, what happens in some companies is that the tools are being used by too many people. Rather than assigning a tool to this person, say, this is yours, take care of it. My laborer learned how to run a skid steer. And when we would rent one, he would be the man that would be on one. And when we finally purchased one, I couldn't get over it. We brought this new skid steer into the shop, and I walked out there, and he's opened up the back of his truck, and he's got all these tools. And I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm changing the oil, and I'm going to lubricate the tractor, and I'm going to clean it up." And I'm going, "Wow, that's great," you know. And he goes, "Well, somebody's got to do it." And he understood what it was all about, and it was his tractor then, and that tractor lasted a long time. So it's very important that you take care of your equipment, because it will take care of you.
You had another quote that I actually incorporated into the book, I think, about one of the big mistakes that contractors make about a new business. They launch and they go out and buy a big new truck, and the impact on their business and their, you know, they think that they are, you know, They're basically going in partnership with the bank as opposed to building their business. Could I get you to expand on that?
Well, it again kind of falls back on what I said earlier about that money is not yours until everybody is paid. If a bank is one of those people that you have to pay, again, that truck looks good, but if you're always having to pay a bank, you're not going to have any money to put back in your account, and you're not going to be able to grow unless you can put money into your business. So often, like I said, you'll see young contractors come into the business, and they've got the big trucks with the big tires, and they've wrapped them with incredible graphics so that you see them for miles around. It's only as good as the people that are behind the wheel and driving the trucks. And so often that expense is not necessary. And it's more important that you get the job and you got the equipment to do the job, that you don't have to flash it and spend all your money into equipment.
One of the things I want to make sure that we touch on, for better or for worse, the whole process of transitioning, succession planning, moving from Norbert to Jeff, from Jeff to the next generation, that is something that a lot of people struggle with and deal with. And I'd love to get your thoughts on how as a family business, you have to prepare for, and what the dynamics are, and how best to do it, things to avoid, that type of thing. It would be a very good opportunity to give some people some great advice and insights into the whole process.
Well, I think a family buyout situation, you don't wait till your partner, your father, the person that you want to buy out is in the hospital. You want to talk about this early in the game. With my father, we started talking, buying him out, probably 20 years before he had a stroke. So he would have been in his 50s. Basically, this came down to, what do we want from the company? What do we need to give you to purchase and make it worth your while? I was lucky with my father. It was his business. It had his names on the trucks. And he said, your name is the same as my name. He says, I don't want anything more than what I have in the way of assets. So when it came buying my father's business from him, we ended up buying the buildings and the properties and the trucks and the equipment and the tools and the office equipment and so forth from him. And we did it in such a way that it gave him retirement money, which after his stroke came in very handy. Having said that, I reached retirement 2 years ago. And so when I retired, you know, the buyout between me and my nephews went the same way, pretty much. it came down to, okay, here's what we own. I can't change your name. As long as you keep the name, then you can buy me out just by paying off on the assets or my share of the assets of the company. But it was all done months in advance. It's not something that you do at the last minute. It gets too complicated sometimes. Emotions get involved, especially when it comes to family. So I think it's best if you do things early in the game.
Fair enough. Do you have any visibility into the business nowadays?
Not too much. The company has changed a bit. My nephews were they were carpenters, so they didn't have any design skills or anything. So they no longer are the design build contractor that we started out as. But because of our reputation as far as quality work is concerned, the architectural firms have picked up on us we're more into custom homework, or they are bigger homes and so forth. And it's amazing how homes have gone from, you know, 100,000, 200,000 to 11 million.
I think if the resources are there and that's what you want, you should be able to get it. And it sounds to me like your nephews are taking the organization in a good direction to be able to deliver on that kind of property.
I really wish them well. It's a tougher industry when you're in a custom home market, because there's a lot of custom home market builders. We were in primarily restoration remodeling, and we worked on primarily older homes. Not a lot of contractors want to mess with those things. It's, an older house tends to have a lot more work involved into it than building a new house. A little more complicated sometimes.
Well, we certainly saw that with our house. You guys did a phenomenal job, but complications were a constant process, and we couldn't have been happier with the outcome. So, you know, it was a pleasure to work with you guys for as long as we did.
Oh, thank you very much.
You know, as I've closed out every one of these conversations, I've asked one question of the person to get their insight on this one issue, and I'd love to ask that question of you. So here we go. What would you tell your younger self to learn or master sooner or to avoid altogether? It can be about your professional career or life in general.
Maybe not take things too seriously. Roll with the punches. Don't get so upset and wound up frustrated. Things get tough and they get hard, and you sometimes feel like you want to hit your head against the wall. Chalk it up to experience and turn around and move on. I think that's important. I think too many people give up. And I didn't give up, but I sure did hit my head on that wall.
I have to say that it doesn't seem like you're any worse for wear.
Juan, I think you're doing a great thing here. I'm so pleased that I'm working with you on helping kids find careers. The trades need good craftsmen, and it's important to learn that. And how you learn that, there's so many different ways, whether it's through a school or apprentice or trade schools or whatever. But the fact that you're encouraging kids to do that.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate you being willing to give your insights and add your voice to this process and help other people overcome or understand what it takes to be successful. It's not an easy road to pursue. And so being able to learn from someone who's been there, done that, but gone through the hard times to get to the good times is also an important experience thing that needs to be out there, or else people are going to avoid it just simply because they don't know what they don't know. And so I'm very, very happy to have had this conversation.
Hard work will get you there.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Skilled Trades Playbook. As always, I look forward to reading your comments. Make sure you let me know if there's anything I can do to improve. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so I can send you the future episodes of the Skilled Trades Playbook. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.